migration controls. Now, what happens is that people in organization, you change systems, you change your processes, and you migrate from the older version to a newer version, or an older system to a newer system. Therefore, it says clearly that you must have, the organization must have a documented migration policy outlining the need for migration plan and methodology for data migration, especially. Now, the migration plan should address verification, consistency, integrity with defined responsibility and timelines. Explicit sign-off from users and application owners are necessary at each migration stage and upon completion. Audit trails documenting conversion, including data mappings and transformation, must be maintained for record purpose. Now, key considerations in migration typically are that you have to ensure that the data retains its integrity throughout the process, and therefore critical. Like if you have a four-digit, if you keep a date of birth, then if you migrate to another application or higher version, then you must have a date of birth. You cannot have a different, your month cannot become a day and the date cannot become month. It has to be in the same format, or even if there is any changes, then it has the same meaning. So it has to have data integrity. Now, data confidentiality during conversion process must be maintained. So that means the systems on which this conversion will take place or migration will take place, that has to be monitored. You cannot have anyone in any environment accessing it. Now, you must have consistency checks, which are vital to ensure coherence of data through migration. So in between, you build up a consistency check always to ensure that you're migrating well. Now, measures should be put in place to guarantee the continuity of operations during and after migration, and if required, a backup plan in case the migration has failed. So all this must be part of your policies and procedures. So it is advisable to separate the last copy of the data before conversion and the first copy of after conversion in an archive. This practice will ensure the reference point for future needs and facilitates traceability of data transactions between the platforms. Because of changing technologies, you will implement, the organization will go for new technologies as the case may be. Therefore, it is recommended that you have a point in your policies and procedures on how will you implement new technologies. So, organization should conduct thorough due diligence, obviously, when implementing new technologies to identify and assess potential risk exposures. Because it is new technologies, many times the risks are unknown, and therefore more emphasis and diligence must be provided, therefore, to ensure that you cover as much as of known risks are known about the system or the technology. You introduce a new business products accompanied by underlying information systems, you must put a formal product approval process. Then the approval process should encompass various aspects, including security consideration and adherence to relevant legal and regulatory requirements. The organization should conduct thorough due diligence when implementing new technologies to identify and assess the potential risk exposures. To introduce a new business product accompanied by underlying information system should require a formal product approval, and the approval process should encompass various aspects, including security consideration and adherent to relevant legal and regulatory requirement. Another point that you will cover in your policies and procedures is encryption. Now, what is encryption? We have been using encryption from time immemorial, but let's look at it formally. Encryption is a process to convert information into codified form with the help of the key and the rule which they can be decoded by the process called decryption. So someone encrypts the data into some codified form having a key, and then gives the rule to the person who is going to decode it from this codified data back to the raw data, which is known as decryption. So encryption and decryption, they normally fall under the science called cryptography. So it is a science, as we said, using mathematics to encrypt and decrypt data. It is primarily used to store and transmit data in a secured way so that it is not accessible by unauthorized individuals. So if I get the codified data, encrypted data to someone gets it, unless they have the key to decrypt it, they may not be able to decrypt, and therefore I'm protecting my information assets. Now, what are the various types of encryption? So you have symmetric encryption, one of them, and asymmetric encryption, the other one. Now, symmetric encryption involves using the same key and algorithms for both encryption and decryption of the file or a message. The creator uses the key and algorithm to encrypt. The reader then uses the same key and algorithm to decrypt. Now, the main thing is that you rely on the secrecy of the key. And if the key is captured by an attacker, decryption or masquerading as the creator is possible, because I can decrypt, get the data, or I can act as if I'm the creator, give you wrong information. That is possible. So the secrecy of the key is the important thing in symmetric encryption. In asymmetric encryption, it uses two mathematically related keys, the private key and the public key. One key encrypts and only the other key can decrypt. The private key must be kept secret while the public key can be openly exchanged. Now, this reduces the risk of key exposure. Even if the public key is known, only the possessor of the private key can decrypt messages. So this is the difference between a symmetric cryptography or a asymmetric cryptography. In symmetric cryptography, as we already explained, the same key is used for both encryption and decryption. While in an asymmetric cryptography, there's a pair of key, one for encryption and one for decryption is used. Symmetric cryptography obviously consumes less of computing power, and asymmetric consumes more computing power. Symmetric cryptography, because the same key is used, is faster. Asymmetric is slower because there are two different keys that are getting used. Formula for number of key requirement is n, where n minus 2 divided by 2, so it's 1. Every sender and receiver has a pair of keys, one public and one private, in an asymmetric cryptography. Symmetric cryptography is used to encrypt large files. Asymmetric cryptography is used to encrypt smaller files because it is slower and consumes more computing power. Symmetric cryptography, the key management is difficult. Asymmetric, the key management is simple. Symmetric cryptography provides confidentiality, while an asymmetric one provides confidentiality, non-repudiation, and integrity. In symmetric cryptography, the encryption key needs to be communicated on a separate path, while in asymmetric cryptography, no such requirement is there. So with this, I hope you've understood. You must have in your policies and procedures encryption. There are two types of encryption. One is symmetric and one is asymmetric encryption. These are, at a bird's view, the differences between both the types of encryption. Now, another point that you must cover in your policies and procedures is data security. Now, residual representation of digital data that remains after attempting to erase or remove the data is called data remanence. So after I have tried to erase, remove, delete star dot star and everything, whatever residual data remains is known as data remanence. I must define and implement procedures to ensure integrity and consistency of electronic data. I must establish a uniform risk-based requirement for protection of data elements. Complexity in implementing data classification may lead to treating all information at a high sensitivity level and implementing encryption as a protective measures. I need risk-based requirements for the protection of the data elements. I have to implement policies for secure media storage, handling, disposal, and transit. I have to ensure that I have a use of physical and environmental controls to access limitation, labeling, and logging of secure media storage. I have to mitigate risk related to data storage in a portable device through encryption, access controls, etc. I have to use secure disposable techniques and such as erasing, overwriting, purging, degaussing, and physical destruction. So I have to list down what do I do and how do I do. I have to maintain media security during transit with contractual requirements, controlled carriers, and identify verification procedures. I have to encrypt customer account and transaction data during transmission to external parties. I have to block, filter, and monitor electronic mechanisms like printing and monitor for unauthorized software and hardware. DLP or data leakage prevention or data leak prevention is a solution which offers a comprehensive approach covering people, process, and systems to identify, monitor, and protect data in use, in motion, and at rest through deep content inspection and centralized management. So you can implement DLP if you wish to. Another point that you will look at in your policies and procedures is vulnerability assessment. So once security research and vendors discover and report a new vulnerability, attackers promptly develop malicious exploit code and deploy it against the specific target. Now, delays in identifying or patching software with critical vulnerabilities offer persistent attackers opportunity to breach systems, seize control of vulnerable machines, and access sensitive data which is stored in that. So therefore, I need to have a vulnerability. So I have to always ensure that the new vulnerabilities I'm able to find out, I'm able to check whether that is relevant to me. If it is relevant to me, then while I'm getting the patch or I'm implementing the patch, how do I protect my critical assets? I have to list down the entire procedure around it. Establishing ongoing security monitoring process. Now, obviously, I have to robust monitoring are essential for identifying events and unusual activity patterns that may impact IT asset security. Now, monitoring control should align with the criticality of IT ensure to ensure effective security. Otherwise, I'll be monitoring everything which is not required. Technologies like SIEM, which is Security Information and Event Management, Intrusion Detection and Prevention System, IDS and IPS, Network Behavior Analysis, NBA, Managed Security Service Providers, MSSP, play crucial role in attack detection and analysis. So SIEM products offer situational awareness by collecting, aggregating, correlating, and analyzing data from various sources. IDS and IPS products with signature-based, anonymity-based, and a rule-based approach are primary sources for identifying attacks and taking appropriate action. NBA, which is network monitoring tools, provide data on network-wide anonymity detection indicating potential incidents. Now, organizations may outsource security event management to MSSP to ensure timely notification and collaborate with MSSP for incident response and remediations. Now, what are the security measures against malwares? We have to list down in our policies and procedures. So what is a malware? Malicious software. It possesses significant threats through various vectors such as web browsing, email attachment, mobile devices. Security measures against malware involve combination of preventive and detective corrective controls at host, network, and at user level. Now, host level measurements include host hardening, host-based firewall, IPS, integrity checking software, and a periodic audit of the configuration. This is host-based measures. Network level measures include limiting executable file transfers, monitoring with IDS and IPS, routing ACLs, proxy servers, filtering against specific attack. And user level measures include education on safe computing practice, awareness of indicators of malicious code, and response action. So administrator should monitor logs from firewalls, IPS, IDS, DNS servers, proxy servers for signs of worm infections. Specific signs include unusual connection attempts, port scanning, IRC connection attempt, excessive access to non-business website, unusual DNS queries. So organization should configure systems to avoid auto-running content from removable media and conduct automated anti-malware scans on insertions. Network access control tools can be deployed to verify security configurations and patch compliance before granting network access. Email attachment filtering is crucial, and filtering various attachment type at the gateway, allowing only necessary extension with documented business case, is an important step in ensuring that you take care of your system. Patch management. Although very low in execution and thought process and considered a normal admin activity, patch management is actually one of the most important activity to ensure that your systems are up to date and any known vulnerabilities are addressed or taken care of. Therefore, as written here, the patch management is crucial to address technical system and software vulnerabilities promptly and efficiently, minimizing the risk of serious business impact. Now, there is a documented standard and procedures for patch management which are essential for every organization, for every system, for every operating systems, for every thing wherever patch manager is required. You define the roles, responsibilities and methods to access system based on information handled, business process and usage environments. The patch management process includes determining methods for obtaining and validating patches from the authorized sources. Now, this is very important because sometimes hackers give you a patch for, and show as if it's coming from authorized source. And if you implement such patches, then you give access to your system to them. So that is why you must have in your process or procedure that how do you determine and obtain the validated patches from the authorized sources. You identify applicable vulnerabilities, assess the business impact, test your patches, deploy them, report on deployment status and addressing all failed deployments. This is especially true in case of endpoint deployments where the users may be out of network for some reason or the other. So, cases where no patch is available for a vulnerability, method should be established to protect information and system, such as disabling services and adding additional access controls and or adding additional success controls. Automated patch management tools and software update tools should be deployed for all systems where available and safe. Change management. Now, obviously, as the business is growing and you are in the business and it's going forward and taking up, there'll be changes in application, in your security, in your network, in your firewalls and so on and so forth. So what, as part of your policies and procedures, you must implement what is required as a change management process. So therefore, as clearly listed here, establishing a change management process is essential. It covers various types of changes, including upgrades, modification, emergency fixes, changing to the supporting computers and network. The change management process should be documented and involve approving and testing changes to ensure that they maintain security controls, performing changes securely, signing off on their correctness and reviewing completed changes to prevent unauthorized alterations. So therefore, what it means is that when you do a change, you test those changes and ensure that it is in line with what has been told and someone approves it before it goes for production. So your change management process should be as detailed as this. Now, types of changes, what do they include? Standard change. So routine changes on day-to-day basis that may not require approval, you can set up an auto approval process. Normal change, non-impacting changes that undergo change approval process. Emergency change, so it's a break-fix changes used during major incidents to recover system. Approvals are regularized after executing the change. Audit trail, so obviously you need to track who has done what, where, when, how and why. So the only way you could do is either put a restriction before access or you manage an audit trail for all the accesses. So therefore, your policies and procedures must clearly ensure the existence of audit trails for IT assets, meeting organizational, regulatory and legal requirement. An audit trail should cover various areas, including financial transaction, customer account activities, modification in sensitive data, access to sensitive information and changes in system access rights. One of the important tools in audit trails is deployment of SIEM system tools for log aggregation, consolidation and correlation and analysis across multiple devices and system. Additionally, correlate event logs with vulnerability scan to ensure scanning tool activity and identify potential exploits on known vulnerable targets. Information security, reporting and metrics. So security monitoring arrangement should offer key decision makers and senior managers an informed perspective on various aspects such as the effectiveness and the efficiency of information security measures, improvement area, identification of unacceptable risk levels, assessment of performance against targets and recommended actions to minimize risk. Now this involves reviewing the organizational risk appetite, comprehending the information security threat landscape, and encouraging business and system owners to address and mitigate unacceptable risks. Security monitoring arrangement should offer key decision makers an informed perspective on various aspects such as this. I think it is repeated, so we'll go in the next one. Information security and critical service providers and vendors. So there are a lot of third-party providers, services, which you take to run your business, and therefore your policy and procedure as part of information security governance and information security must cover information security and critical service providers and vendors. So third parties such as ISP, ASPs, MSPs or VSP, they play various roles and often require access to confidential information and systems. Now the role of third party should be evaluated, checked as per the organization's IT environment control and control objectives. Also, you must check the environment at the third party to ensure that where it is getting accessed, who has access to that information, how are they protecting to ensure that you are also safe. Now, the effectiveness of third-party controls can impact my organization's ability to achieve control objectively, positively and negatively. Therefore, weakness in third-party controls may arise from gaps in control environment, poor control design, or lack of knowledge or experience in people there, and over-reliance on third-party controls without compensatory controls within the organization. The next point in policies and procedures is the network security. So obviously, everything is about network, interconnected network, we have seen. So considering that, network becomes very important. Therefore, you must have your policy and procedure to ensure that you take adequate care of your network. So we have to protect against the growing cyber threats. It requires multiple layers of defense known as defense in depth. Defense in depth for most organizations should at least consider two areas: protecting the enclave boundaries or perimeter and protecting the computing environment. A few network protection devices are like IDS, which is intrusion detection systems. It identifies network traffic in near real time using signatures. It's external and internal behind the firewall for visibility on both incoming and outgoing traffic. Network Intrusion Prevention System, or NIPS. It accesses control mechanisms and is similar to firewalls. It detects security events like IDS but can take actions beyond alerting, such as blocking traffic flows. You can quarantine something, so you protect the network by placing non-confirming devices in restricting part of the network unless they confirm. DNS placement. Optimum placement is split DNS, which one firewall server serving public domain information to the outside and the another server performing recursive queries for internal users. Remote access. Now with work from home, everything is remote access, so you must have a clear policies and procedures for it. So organizations which provide remote access to network and resources through external connections such as modems, internet or private communication line. Remote access, obviously if not controlled, exposes the organization to potential manipulation and subvention by external attackers. Therefore, management should establish policies to restrict remote access and maintain strict control of remote access devices. Now, good controls for remote access includes disallowing it unless there is a compelling business need with management approval first. Regular reviews of remote access approval should be conducted and resend those without compelling business justification. Remote access device should be appropriately configured, secured, and regularly patched and updated. Encryption must be used to protect communication and sensitive data during remote access. And periodic audits of access device configuration and patch levels are essential. Techniques like VLAN and network segments should be used to restrict remote access to authorized areas only. And logging of remote access communication is crucial with timely analysis and follow-up on the anomalies. So, centralizing modem and internet access ensures consistent authentication and appropriate perimeter protections. And logging and monitoring of data, time, user location, duration, purpose for remote access, including two-factor authentication, must be implemented. Controls for remote access use should align with the sensitivity of the activity, such as restricting access device use and ensuring device trustworthiness. This is very common attack that takes place, and therefore it is recommended that you have a policy and or procedure to address it. Now, if you're providing internet services and suddenly unusual network traffic conditions come up and system performance goes down, you could have what is known as a denial of service attack or DDoS attack. Now, this is where someone maliciously does it, or sometime it happens. So in both the cases, it is network traffic that needs to be monitored and why the sudden surge has taken place. If it is genuine sudden surge, then you have to upgrade your infrastructure. And if it is a controlled surge or a malicious sudden surge, then you have to find ways of protecting and ensuring that the system is taking care of this and then coming up on its own without impacting, because what it does, it breaches the accessibility portion of CIA tried by ensuring you don't have access, your customers don't have access to it, which is a very dangerous sign. So therefore, you must do plan that how will you monitor your surge in the system resources, and especially which are internet facing or client facing or outside facing. And in case you see a sudden surge, how do you ensure that the surge is maintained, managed, and does not impact the system? As I said, if you follow some standards, then what it ensures is that you don't miss out any part of security. And therefore, in most of the cases, ISO 27001 is recommended. So ISO 27001 focuses on implementing, monitoring, maintaining, and continually improving your information security management systems. 27002 provides detailed steps and security measures for building an ISMS, and both are key frameworks in ensuring that you cover all these security aspects in your policies and procedures. COBIT and ITIL, while incorporating security aspects, are more geared towards overall information and IT governance. Now, this is a third-party accredited certification for independent verification of assurance level. A valuable management tool for defining and monitoring service level internally and with contractor partner organization. So ISO 27001 follows a plan, do, check, act or PDC way or Deming cycle approach, where in the plan phase, you design the ISMS, assessing the risk and selecting appropriate control. In the do phase, you implement and operate the selected controls. In the check phase, you review and evaluate the performance, that is the efficiency and effectiveness of the ISMS. And in the act phase, you make necessary changes to bring the ISMS back to peak performance. Wireless security. Now, most of the offices have wireless access, and we are so used to Wi-Fi that it is now we don't go for connected LAN environment. Everyone uses wireless. Therefore, wireless security also becomes an important part in your ISG and IS monitoring. So you must have well-defined perimeter or access points. Your wireless security policy must encompass devices like personal computers, cellular phone, PDAs connected to internal networks. You must do unauthorized monitoring and denial of service attack without physical wire connections. It has a potential for unauthorized devices to connect, perform man-in-the-middle attack, or access other wireless devices. So this requires extensive use of encryption for user and device authentication. And encryption is a protective measures for securing wireless communication. Now, having done all the careful things, planning it out, having standards, ensuring security, perimeter, firewalls, everything, networks, application, still in case some incident takes place, which is environment or outside environment, which may have a security implication or may not have security implication, but business implication. So therefore, another aspect that you must cover in your policy and procedures is your business continuity considerations. So business continuity consideration is any incident that has a security implication. Now, depending on the event, some or all the elements of security environment may change. At different trade-offs may exist between availability, integrity, and confidentiality, accountability, with different appetite for risk on part of the management. A business continuity plan should be reviewed as integral part of the security process. Then information security assurance. So you must have a penetration testing. Now what penetration testing services do is, it's a formalized process designed to bypass security controls for systems or organizational resistance testing. It uncovers security weakness and accesses vulnerability to potential attacks. In this, various attack scenarios evaluate the system response and identify weak spots. So the penetrator testers, the pen testers as we call them, they attack the system, the assets in various ways and try to find the weak spots. So it actually simulates the real life attacks for proactive discovery and mitigation of security vulnerabilities. It is conducted annually and complemented by continuous monitoring. General information regarding delivery channels. So organization emphasize security awareness for customers, urging protection of PINs, security tokens, and personalized personal data. Both an organization and customer share responsibility for the safety of service and systems. Now, customers are advised to implement recommended security measures for their devices during online activities. Ongoing risk monitoring and compliance evaluation are crucial due to evolving internet environment. And management should update the risk process, reevaluate control measures, and conduct testing and auditing when these risk parameters change. So you've set up everything. You've also made plans for BCP, and then you have informed the customers what thing. Now, what they have to do to ensure that they also become part of the security aspect of the organization. Now you have to check whether those security controls that you have listed down and the risk mitigation plans that you have, are they effective? So the organization must establish measurement parameters to check or assess the effectiveness of security controls. And these parameters and the combination is termed as matrix or dashboard. When choosing a metric, several considerations should be taken into account. So measurability, relevance, satisfaction levels, unit of measurement, weightage, etc. must be considered. So as an example, consider defining metrics for an organization-wide antivirus solution. If the organization has 4,000 machines, all covered by antivirus, updated daily, and any quarantine cleared within a week, the predefined matrix value would be ideal value 100, optimal value 98, satisfactory value 95%. So to summarize, Information security is dedicated to safeguarding sensitive information, ensuring confidentiality, integrity, and availability, the CIA tried. It protects your digital and physical assets through technology, process, and policies. IS governance guides and controls an organization's information security efforts. It establishes policies, it assesses the risk, and aligns security practice with business objectives. Governance ensures accountability and effective management of information security risk. The fields involve exploring cybersecurity framework, risk management, legal aspects of data protection. As technology advances, these areas are crucial for maintaining organization integrity amid evolving cyber changes. With this, we come to the end of this introductory chapter. Thank you so much for your patient listening.